Was it Jazz and Real 2?
They took me to Peterborough Station, and I got the train. Well, I sent a telegram to my parents to say I was coming home. And from Peterborough to North Walsham, we got home about 11:15 at night by the time we got here. We held up 3 or 4 times by air raids and such like, but not in this area, but they stopped the train and everything. When I got home, Father was on the platform. We got home, because the first thing, how long are you home for? I said, 10 days. Anyway, 3 days later, I had a telegram, report back to Peterborough immediately. So I went back to Peterborough, reported in, and there we had a, well, he was a sort of a, what would you call him? He was half-bred Burmese captain, another English captain, I forget their names now, but that was us three who formed it, another group. They said, we're going to Burma.
Did you have any choice?
No. Well, you could have backed out if you liked, I suppose, but... So,
how did you feel about that?
Well, then the time then the war in Germany had finished, and everyone was saying, well, I can't last much longer with the Japs. And when they told us where we were going, they said, the war will be over within a month. So anyway, we went out, we went to India. From there, we went by train, they flew us to India. We went from the train to Ceylon, to where the base camp was. Well, there they sort of gave us a little training in jungle warfare and such like. We had notice then about 3 days later, you're going off tonight. But there's 12 Gurkhas going with you this time. Well, we'd never been with Gurkhas, nothing like that before. We knew nothing about them. Well, there was a sergeant, and the rest of them were all privates. But anyway, this time we went to Dakota, English crew, wasn't it? And that was out the door, standing on the side of the door, and pull yourself out and just drop. Well, we dropped it in sort of a clearing, with hills both sides of us. But the valley itself, there was a little village, Chilo Atet, that was called.
Called what?
Chilo Atet. Small village. And
which part of Burma is this?
About, well, 8 miles from Mochi, where the diamond mines were. And that's where the Japs were.
Do you know the month that you went in?
No, not offhand, no.
Is this 45 or 44?
When did I come home?
47.
I presume it must be 45.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a little idea later on. Because we was in there, I was thinking getting on for a month. And they sent us a message one night. Well, I called them up on the, we had different times a day to call. I had a list of the times when we got to call them up. I called them up in the afternoon, and they said they got a message for us. When I decoded it, they said that there had been an atomic bomb dropped on Japan, and the Japanese had surrendered.
How long had you been there by then?
Oh, it must have been getting on for a month.
Well, the bombs were dropped on Japan in the second week in August, 1945. So presumably you must have gone in July.
Yeah. Well, coming out of France, I was only home 10 days, and we were off again then. We went out to Burma. Well, 10 days, I had 10 days leave, and then the time we got back to camp and back out to India, be a fortnight, 3 weeks from.
What was your jump like into Burma compared with France?
All right. Yeah, nothing. There was the flares, the lights were out there for us to drop onto. There was no still night, moonlit night. We just dropped. There was no accidents or nothing to any of us. Well, the first night we got there, we were sleeping. That was just sleeping rough outside. But the next morning, there was gangs of civilians. There was some, they called them the Sinhalese army because they were trained in Ceylon, but they were actually Burmese. One in every six had a rifle or a machine gun, but they all got together and they built us bamboo huts to live in. Well, of course, then we sent back and said how many there was in the camp. They wanted rice and one thing or another, rifles. And then on the third day, I always remember, it was the third day I had to send a message, and they kept jumping in and stopping me, repeat from such and such a letter. Well, I had trouble getting the message through. Well, when they made this drop, there was rice, there were some letters for us from home, and everything they wanted for the natives. There was food for us, whiskey, rum, bottle of rum. And they also sent another wireless set with batteries. And when I went in, all we had to charge our batteries was a little machine. There was two blokes who used to have to crank it all day long to get the battery up to strength. But on this drop, they dropped us a little motor charger, petrol motor, dropped some petrol with it. So I just put the three batteries, I had three batteries, they dropped me, I put them on, charged them up in no time at all. So I had no trouble with batteries there. And well, everything went all right till we got this message saying that the atomic bomb had dropped. And they've got broadcast in Burmese. And they told us what wavelength that was on, so we have the wireless on, get the... With these, the few soldiers we had and the civilians around there, they listened to it. They also said, if there's a Japanese camp in your area, will you go and see them, get our surrender?
We want what?
Get our surrender. So the next day, there was the two officers, four Gurkhas and myself. We went, we left our arms and everything in the camp, just, we didn't have no rifles, nothing with us. We went down into Mochi, and of course the Japanese could see us walking down the hill into Mochi, and they stood there waving flags and shouting, happy as could be. They were pleased that was over. And we saw the old, I think he was equivalent to a general. He sat there and he ordered tea for us, they made us a cup of tea, they had sugar milk, they had everything they wanted, plenty of food about there. And they said they'd heard the message, and they were going to dump all the arms and everything. Just wait to see what happened. We went back to camp, and we had got another message that night. We'd got to go about 50 miles north to an aerodrome, and that was Americans, they'd fly us home. Well, fly us back to India. Well, we walked that 50 mile, 2 days.
What was that like?
That wasn't too bad. That was a bit up and down the mountains in places, but that was hot, very hot. But we followed it. Then we had two guides with us who knew where, you know, exactly where to go, follow which path. Well, they called them paths, or they were woods, this, some of them. And we got up this aerodrome, I forget the name of that. We got to the aerodrome, got in, and we waited 2 days, and they put us on a Dakota, flew us back to India. From India, we went to our base camp in Ceylon, where we debriefed. So there was a sergeant. He said, I've got some letters here for you. Well, one of them was from my father, say that I've been awarded the Croix de Guerre from the French. And the other one was mentioned in dispatches from our government. So I took him to the CEO. He said, I haven't heard nothing about it. He said, but I'll chase him up and see what I can find out. Well, I was a holding camp, they called it. I was in there about 3 weeks, and he sent for me. He said, no, he said, you've got about six, seven months to do before you go home. He said, would you like a little job? We won't earn anything. We're just wasting time. So I said, all depends what it is. Well, he said, I got a letter I've written out. He said, I didn't think you'd refuse. Will you go to the HQ moments, say Captain Barnes and give him this letter? So I went, saw this Captain Barnes. He said, well, the job he said we got, he said, we've got to start cutting down on staff. He said, no, we've got a captain as an RTO in our RTO, whose office on Colombo Station. There's also an English corporal, an English private, and two Singhalese civilians working on the staff. No, he said, oh, it might sound funny, but we've got to start the time to get rid of the captain. He's gone in a fortnight. Do you think you would do it? Well, I said, there's only one way to find out, and that's let me go down there with him now and see what happened. Well, I went down with him a fortnight, and the captain come home, and they left me in charge of RTO. And that's what I done until the time when I come home. Well, what happened then, I was going down, I was a decent boil in there, and they sent for me to go up to the office, and I went up. And he said, you got 3 months to go before you go home. I said, yeah, I said, we've been marked up on the calendar. Well, he said, do you a favour if you want to. He said, instead of going to India, back to India, we've got a ship coming in, well, I can take 3 passengers. If you like, he said, I'll make arrangements so you come back, go back on that. Because the ship's coming in Colombo Harbour, they couldn't come right in. They used to have to stop outside and boats go take stuff out and bring back on little boats. Well, we boarded this little old ship, come home, docked at Southampton, and they sent us to Aldershot. We got to Aldershot, and on the ticket come up the first day, there was the names of people they want to go in. Second day, my name's right at the top. I went in, saw the CEO, he said, you're getting released early, but there's nothing, we can't hold you here now, we can't do nothing with you, I sent you home, so you might as well go. Give me a ticket, I went to the stores and got a civilian suit and everything we wanted. They checked the kit to see what kit you've got. Well, I'd lost a pair of boots. One of them had lost all pinched pair of socks I know I had to pay for. And got my suit and everything else. Went back again. I said to, there was a sergeant major and the officer, outside officer, he said, when do we go home then? Well, he said, here's your pass. He said, go and get taken to the CO. He said, he'll sign it and that'll be it. So I went in and saw him, he signed it. He said, when they go to the paymaster, he said, we know you're gone, we know everyone's coming in. He said, I don't know if he'll give you pay what you've last time you've been out, or whether it'll be sent to you later. Well, I know I went and they paid me £100. I mean, I hadn't drawn no wage all the time, been in, same as in France, we never drew no money. We had it all when we come home. He gave me £100, he said, they'll have to go through now the paymasters, he said, and they'll sort everything out, you'll get what's due to you. And so I just took the £100, signed for it, put my civvies on, put my army clothes in the case. They took us down to Aldershot Station. And there was, when on the way home on the ship, I met a bloke. He said to me, you come from Norfolk. I said, yeah. He said, well, so do I. North Walsham. I said, so do I. So I said, I can't remember, you live in North Walsham? Well, he said, I was in the army in North Walsham. That was the Beds and Hurts. He said, I got in with a young lady, he said, married her. He said, so I'm now going back. So, of course, we come down to London together. When I had looked at the trains, we had about 5 hours to wait before we get a train home. So we said, we're going to have something to eat. He said, have a look round. So we put luggage into stores down there and we went round. But the train we come home on was what they called a mail train. We sent a telegram home saying we were coming home on the first train in the morning. Well, I got in North Walsham at 6:30 in the morning. The father was there to meet me, and that was it.
Just going back to Burma, how did you like that operation as compared with France? Which did you prefer?
I preferred France.
Why was that?
Well, I mean, say, they were more like, you can say, more like English. As the living habits and such like. But living rough in Burma, and you got mosquitoes and rats as big as cats and all sorts out there. you didn't even, when you went to bed at night, you didn't feel so comfortable.
Were you nervous there?
Well, I was more nervous of getting malaria than I was anything, because I used to tell you all about malaria and such like. And I mean, in France, you was getting water out of taps, which was pretty, should have been all right. But in Burma, you were just getting them out of streams. But you might go down the stream a day, get some out. You might have a walk about half a mile up the stream, there'd be people what doing the washing up there. And you was drinking that water was coming past.
But were you sterilising the water?
You had sterilised taps to put in, yeah. The only trouble then is they made the water bitter.
It made you what?
Bitter. The water was really bitter.
Did you fall sick in Burma?
No. No.
What were the Gurkhas there for?
The Gurkhas were more or less, well, as they said, they were more or less there as to make sure you didn't get into trouble. And, well, they were trained explosive men, all of them. But they used to go out with the two captains, so spin the camp. And there was a civilian there who could talk English. And we used to try to get them hold a rifle right and all that sort of thing. Use a machine gun. We more or less trained civilians to be soldiers in a short time.
Were the Japanese inflicting any casualties?
No, not on us. They never came. Well, there was one came near us, and I thought, from how they were talking, he was drunk when they got him. He was wandering about on his own. And he, in civilian life, he was a chef in a hotel in Tokyo. And he came with us. They brought him back, and they didn't know what to do with him. And one of these Gurkhas came to me, the sergeant, that one night. He said, Japanese buddy, he said he don't want to leave here. He'll stop here with us. He used to do our cooking. I mean, when we left the camp that morning, we left him there. So they dropped replacements in for us in Burma. We left him there with these others, and he was actually crying when we left. He wanted to come go away with us. He was as happy as a cuckoo with us. There was only one trouble with him. If you was in the camp to read a book or something rather than the afternoon, nothing to do, he'd craze all afternoon, every 10 minutes, cup of tea, cup of tea.
What was his name?
Oh, that was a long name, his name was.
Any other incidents that happened to you in Burma?
No. Well, I went out one day. The Gurkhas, there was six Gurkhas went out with the two officers with some of the troops. And there was a messenger come in with a... He said there was some two Japanese seen at the north of us on a path about 2 miles away. So I thought, so we don't want them just walking in just alike. So we went out to see them. And this bloke, we brought the message in. He kept saying, this way, sir, this way, sir, this way, sir. Finished, we messing around there for about 3/4 an hour, we got lost ourselves in the jungle. That's the only time we sort of had anything sort of, or you had worrying. But we got back all right.
But was your Jodhpur party harassing the Japanese at all?
Well, they went out, and twice a day they used to send a message back to me, with them, if they had a message to send back to HQ, saying what they'd seen, how many troops and such like, and what they were doing. We never tried to interfere with them.
What was transmission and reception like?
That was good, because I think that was only from Burma to India.
Was it the same equipment that you were using?
Just the same, yeah. Just the same. Wallace in a suitcase.
Did you make friends with the Burmese at all?
Well, when we'd been there about 2 or 3 days, and there was a little short, thick-set bloke come in, spoke blinking good English, but he was Burmese. And he said he wanted to come and start with us. Well, he was a doctor. He actually was living with the Japs in Mochi. But he was a doctor. And his wife, she spoke English. And she, before the war started, she was an announcer to the English on Burmese radio. She used to give the news broadcasts on Burmese radio in English. Well, they come and lived with us. But when they come, we never had no medical supplies, only just sort of local things they gave you. We told them we got this doctor and everything, and they sent a load of supplies in, medical supplies in to us.
Why had this Burmese doctor come to join you?
He got fed up with the Japs. He was actually living in Mochi. And he reckoned things were really tight under our rule.
Was he under suspicion?
Well, we kept a good eye on him, but everyone... The villagers what lived in this little village, they all know him and said he never helped the Japs if he was forced to help them. But he never tried to go out or anything like that. All day long he'd be going round all the villages about there, seeing if he could do anything for them, if they were ill.
Did you move about very much in
Not a lot, not in Burma. The only thing we were trying to do when we first got there, this valley, there was a big white strip in the middle, and we said, well, if they make it a little wider, instead of drop, then make drops like landplanes. Well, that was a plane, something like a Lysander. American sort of, it's similar token to a Lysander what we had. It was a similar token plane what they had, and there was always the black American used to come in pilot, and instead of dropping the parachute, he'd pre-fall everything come down. I mean, sack of rice, about 2 stone of rice in a bag. I'd drop here and I'd fly over the bungalow on the other side there, but he'd drop everything like that, and his containers, he dropped them. But, I mean, they sent us whiskey and stuff in there. But they dropped, they never used to get broke. He'd be about, 10 foot off the ground, flying up this valley.
Did you ever get any planes that landed?
No, we said we'd made it, so we thought they could land, and they... got on to him, approached him and said, "What they, you know, do you think that's safe for you to land?" Well, he said, "I think it could," but he said, "I'd sooner free drop and get out again."